Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. Vegan Nation is an informational program featuring news, music, interviews, and events on the vegan evolution revolution happening worldwide, manifesting a world of peace, health, egalitarianism, and sustainability. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor its management. In this episode, I'm featuring the panel discussion during Summerfest in Pennsylvania. And this was recorded by Born Vegan, Serena Farb in Kansas. The panel discussion is titled, Vegans Spill the Truth About Lab-Grown Meat. Here's Joanne Farb, the moderator, starting off the panel discussion.
You know, some vegans are telling us that we should embrace lab-grown meat because promoting veganism is not working. They say we are losing the battle for people's hearts and minds in converting them to veganism. You know, the same people who encouraged us to promote humane meat and dairy a few years back are now the loudest proponents of lab meat. Most people won't change, they're saying again. So instead of trying to inspire them to embrace authentic justice, we should be pragmatic. But a strong case can now be made that promoting humane meat actually sustained demand for meat and further legitimized killing. And you know, my own experience of 25 years as an activist, the biggest stumbling block that I now encounter when I try to promote veganism to people is that I encounter people who won't consider it because of humane meat. You see, its promotion supported a cultural paradigm that is now an endpoint in many people's ethical evolution. You see, once people embrace and form social networks around the ideology that it's okay to enslave and kill other beings, you know, as long as you don't do all the terrible things that factory farms do, they become the most resistant to veganism. Now we have investors lining up to support lab meat, and the same people who threw veganism under the bus for humane meat, they now want us to support lab meat. So if you care about justice, health, and sustainability, and a livable planet for our children, it's critical to deconstruct the rhetoric on this issue. And to help us do that, we have put together this fantastic panel. So on the far end is attorney Lee Hall, a 35-year vegan and the author of On Their Own Terms, Animal Liberation for the 21st Century. Lee holds a specialized law degree in environmental law and is deeply involved in sustainability research as a consultant for the Encyclopedia of UN Sustainability Goals. Harold Brown was born and raised on a cattle farm. He was in 4-H and spent half his life in farming. After leaving the farm, Harold embarked on a journey of self-discovery, which led him to become vegan and an activist. On this end is Dr. Milton Mills, a graduate of Stanford University School of Medicine and an urgent care physician in Washington, D.C. And over there is Serena Farb, who holds degrees in biochemistry and policy studies and spent a year interning with filmmaker Tribe of Heart. So let's ask our biochemist now to explain to us, how is lab meat created?
So the idea behind this technology is that we will take just a few cells, a little, you know, quarter-sized biopsy or piece of flesh from animals, or even, as some proponents are suggesting, a feather that falls off of a chicken. And you just take that feather and can extract cells from that, grow them in a laboratory setting, into all kinds of different pieces of meat, whether that's actually a steak type cut or meatballs or, you know, and they would have to take flesh from different animals to produce each kind of meat. And the idea is that you could take that, you know, amount of cells or flesh one time, grow them in a lab indefinitely, and have now an endless supply of flesh that never came from a slaughtered animal and didn't require killing an animal. So that's the idea. And the idea is there would be no animals needed past that first point. But the reality is very different. The reality is that extracting cells from any flesh or feathers or anything like that is very difficult to get the right type of cells. We have to have, you know, they need stem cells or specific muscle cells, different types of tissue. And extracting and growing cells in a lab is actually very hard. Cells do not normally stay alive indefinitely. And this is true in our bodies as well. Most cells will replicate a certain number of times before eventually dying off and being unable to replicate further. And the current technology right now requires that we would have to repeatedly take biopsies or pieces of flesh from animals once that set of cells can no longer replicate to produce meat. Cells also have to be grown in a growth medium with very specific nutrients. And the primary nutrient that most cells are grown in right now is something called fetal bovine serum, which comes from slaughterhouses as well. It's taken from baby cow fetuses by injecting a needle into their heart and draining their blood. That's what cells are being grown in. And cells are also easily contaminated. It is very hard to get cells to stay alive in a lab without antibiotics and very careful sterile technique. So there's a lot of technological problems. And then there's also, so there's two options really for how we can scale this up, and potentially proponents are saying do this. So the first option is to repeatedly take flesh from an animal, grow it up, and it may produce a lot more meat, theoretically, than killing that animal would. But then those cells will still die out and you'll have to go back and take more cells, more flesh, on a pretty regular basis. The other option, which most proponents are putting forward as their goal and what they're telling us we're going to be doing, is that we will take cells one time and then manage to transform them. And this is a technique using genetic modification to manipulate the cells to overcome their natural shortening and lifespan, to make them what's something that's called immortal, so that they will replicate indefinitely in culture and will, you know, not have to take any more cells. So that's the second option. However, there's several mechanisms in transforming cells that will have to be put in place. One is making the cells immortal. The second is most cells, when they're in our body or in a lab, they grow until they start touching each other. And this is called contact inhibition. And they will stop growing once there are too many cells. When you overcome that mechanism, which they'll have to do to actually grow chunks of flesh and meat, when you overcome that, that has a lot of similarities to the way cancer cells behave. So that's the basic idea behind the science right now. And then there's the scaling up problem, because there are several companies that have made this technology a single meatball or a single piece of chicken in a lab. And there are animal advocates that have tasted these and said this is amazing and this is the future. But scaling that up to any kind of level that works is a long, long ways off. There are many, many technological hurdles that are absolutely not in place from a scientific perspective and are many, many years away. So right now, we are exploiting animals, taking cells and flesh from them, using fetal bovine serum and testing on animals in the name of a future technology.
Lee, there are a lot of different names for lab meat. Can you talk a little bit about the different terms that are currently being used?
At the beginning, we heard a lot of talk about in vitro meat, lab meat, and terms that conjure up this idea of a lab are less frequently used today. Many of the journals discussing this, whether they be sociological journals or scientific journals, are referring to this now as cultured meat. And the concern that people have when you have focus groups and you try to figure out, are people going to accept this? Is this lab-grown meat something that people want in their everyday lives? So they respond better to terms such as clean meat, because their big concern is, focus groups have found that people are concerned about the limits of the earth. They are concerned about the environmental impact of animal agribusiness. And they do believe that there is a connection between lab-grown meat and mitigation of climate change. They are also concerned about humane factors surrounding animal agribusiness. Almost universally, they express these concerns, but they didn't express the same strength in the interest of buying, putting their money where their mouth is on these concerns. The focus groups found that the public was most interested in health, and they were most concerned that the lab-grown meat might be somehow not good for us over time, that maybe we would be used as experimental subjects in a sense, because we would be the first generation eating it. And so the focus group said, if you want to market this, if you want to promote this, focus on its naturalness, that it's like meat that people are used to eating, that it's like something traditional, and that it'll avoid health problems. So it'll avoid bacteria, salmonella, and so forth, clean meat.
Let's ask Milton, what are the health implications of lab-grown meat?
Thank you, John. The bottom line is that animal tissue should not be consumed by human beings. And so I don't care if you grow it in a lab, if you get it from an animal, or if space aliens deliver it in the middle of the night, it's still going to cause disease. It's going to promote cancer, it's going to harm your kidneys, it's going to create a heart disease and raise your risk for strokes, diabetes, and everything else. That's the bottom line. Human beings should not be ingesting animal tissue. And so no matter how it's produced, it's unhealthy and disease-causing, and it shouldn't be done. And the real problem I have with this is that the minute you start going through all these gesticulations to try and create something we shouldn't have in the first place, you are in essence putting your stamp of approval on eating animal tissue. And ultimately, we all know what's going to happen. Some idiot is going to walk into a store, pick this crap up, eat it, and say, you know what? This is not as good as the real thing. I'm going to go kill me an animal. So the bottom line is this, whatever you call it, clean meat, which, by the way, if they call it clean meat, then we should get to be able to call it the stuff that's in the meat case dirty meat. It's unhealthy for us.
Thank you. Let's ask the farmer. Harold, do you think lab-grown meat is likely to end slaughterhouses?
In my opinion, no. As affluence grows, particularly we hear about it in the news in China, American agribusiness has been spreading CAFOs and meat culture into all parts, every continent on the planet. One of the markers or indicators of affluence among most cultures is that you get to eat meat. The industry is looking at this. I would make a correlation between this and the tobacco industry. So we put a big dent with, you know, the anti-tobacco campaign and put the hurt on them. Where'd they go? They went to China. Huge market. They're making buku bucks. Well, the meat industry is going to do the same. And I don't think it's going to be measurable, but slaughterhouses are actually going to be built. More of them will be built in these countries, because the industry has a really interesting way of playing both ends against the middle. So you'll see companies that will take dairy, for instance. Dean Foods bought Silk so they could be in the plant-based milk business, but they're the largest dairy cooperative in the United States. They learned that's just how markets work. It's playing both ends against the middle. They're going to do the same thing with this. You're going to see some big agribusiness get involved, and they're going to, you know, buy up this small startup, and then they're going to be playing both ends against the middle. And is that going to move the moral and ethical ball forward? I really don't think so.
Thank you, Harold.
We're listening to Joanne Farb, the moderator of the panel, Vegans Spill the Truth About Lab-Grown Meat. We just heard from Harold Brown, Dr. Milton Mills, Lee Hall, and Serena Farb. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena Massachusetts. We'll be taking a short break, and then we'll continue with the panel of Vegans Spill the Truth About Lab-Grown Meat. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation.
What time is it?
It's mango time.
Hi, folks. This is Chuck Demers. Please tune us in on Tuesday mornings on the Jukebox. Time from 9 a.m. to 12 noon. I, along with Rose, will play the best songs we know. We call the show Mango Time. something sweet, juicy, and good for you. Okay, we're at WCUW Worcester 91.3 FM and WCUW.org.
Welcome back from the break. You're tuned into Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Molly Narrow in Worcester, Massachusetts. We're featuring the panel discussion, Vegans Spill the Truth About Lab-Grown Meat. This panel includes Dr. Milton Mills, Harold Brown, Serena Farb, and Lee Hall. Much thanks to Born Vegan and the panelists. Serena Farb's mom, Joanne Farb, is the moderator for this panel. Here's Serena.
So I just want to share a quote from the Tri-State Livestock News of this month to support Harold's point. They actually ran an article titled How Alternative Proteins Can Support the Animal Agriculture Industry. And their quote says, alternative proteins from insects to cell cultures are not something to view as a replacement for animal proteins, but just another competitor in a huge global market. So the industry is getting involved in this, and they're telling the agribusinesses and animal producers that the global protein market is going to increase so much due to the population growth in the next few years that they recognize they simply will not be able to produce that much traditional animal-based meat. So they're accepting things like cell-based meat, but they don't view it as reducing or trading off with the production of traditional animal-based meat.
And Milt, did you have something to add?
Well, I have a whole bunch to add. But again, you know, one of the things that troubles me is that the people who talk about this talk about it as though it is a real thing, number one, and as though it is something that is easily accomplished. And the fact of the matter is that nobody has done a real cost analysis of what trying to do this, as Serena had alluded to, on an industrial scale is going to really amount to. I mean, as a physician, when I look at what it takes for us to do an operation in terms of the inputs, we've got to use sterile gowns, sterile gloves, booties, hats, masks. The room has to be cleaned with these very, very expensive reagents, and we have to drape the patient in sterile gowns, have sterile instruments. And even with all of that, within that operating room, the only thing that's considered truly sterile is that little area that is exposed on the patient that's going to be operated on. If you're talking about growing tons and tons of tissue, you are going to have an absolutely sterile factory, which of course is impossible, which is why they're going to have to use these tons and tons of antibiotics. But then my question is, how in God's name are they going to make, and Serena, you may be able to answer this, the amino acids? Right now, the manufacturer, chemical manufacturer of amino acids utilizes ammonia, which is one of the most toxic compounds around. But then you just can't, you know, throw ammonia in a big vat and boom, you get an amino acids, because the 20 different amino acids are very different and they're very, have very complicated chemical structure. So again, you're talking about massive inputs of energy, reagents to try and create these amino acids in the first place. And that's going to be done in some poor third world country where the environment will be poisoned to hell and back. And the bottom line is, the way I look at it as a physician, is trying to grow tissue in a lab is like trying to make people pee. If your kidneys stop working, I can pee for you, but it's a hell of a lot more expensive than what you can do for yourself at home.
Thank you. So, you know, I'm from Kansas, and when I think about the people I know there that are the most resistant to veganism, that are really going to be the last people to give up meat, I start to wonder, how likely are these people, the people that are really into local, organic, humane, grass-fed, how likely are they or anybody to accept lab-grown meat? Serena?
Not very likely. And if we have to educate people to eat something different, why not just educate people to eat vegan?
Thank you. Yeah.
Harold? Well, another part of this is, to me, is such an Orwellian idea. And it's become this Orwellian debate about how we're going to market this, the idea of it. And I can see, I know people that are going to say, oh, well, if, you know, we're going to get away from using animals at all, and all I've got, my only option in the store is going to be lab meat, screw that. I'm going to go out and hunt. I used to be a hunter. Wildlife is going to suffer because of this. So you're going to have the hobby farm. It's going to, you know, we're going to have the humane, the happy meat, and then the alternative to that will be hunting.
And the other corollary is trying to convince more human beings to eat animals is only going to massively ramp up the collective misery on this planet, not only for the animals, but in the levels of disease that we're going to create in human beings. This is a monstrous idea that needs to be disposed of immediately.
Thank you.
When we talk about lab-grown meat, what we're not doing is talking about how we can feed ourselves in generally differently than most people are doing today. So, for example, I think we need to talk more about lentils and beans and because if we really want an alternative to pushing the earth past its capacity to replenish nourishment for us, what we're talking about is lentils and beans and peas, because these are foods that can be grown in financially poor areas of the world, and they can be grown with very low water inputs. And they can be grown and farmed by independent small farmers around the world. And as long as we are talking about solutions coming down from on high, from the food authority somewhere, with very wealthy people backing up some startups, then we're not talking about what we really need to do to advance humanity. And by advance humanity, I mean to learn, to live as part of the bio community, and not on top of it. And you know, we have, right here at Summerfest, we have people making artisan farmhouse cheeses out of cultured cashews. How beautiful. So Chef Chu is here from the Oakland area and is working on, now is getting into the grocery stores with products that replicate the corner store foods that people go and get at 10 p.m. right, when they're craving something from the local corner store, those foods, but only presented from plant-based, healthful, and absolutely delicious, if you've ever tried Chef Chu. And when people ask me, do I personally have a visceral feeling about lab-grown meat, I say, yes, I do. I have a visceral love for vegan entrepreneurs who are working so hard with little cafes and food trucks and corner store replacements that are actually healthful in food deserts. I have a visceral love and empathy and wish for them to prevail.
Thank you, Lee. Serena?
We have to keep in mind who is going to be in charge of this technology. While it might be some small animal advocates promoting this and startups that are in this because they want to reduce animal suffering or do something good and they view this technology as a way to do it, the largest investors are the biotechnology, pharmaceutical companies, Gates Foundation, large multi-billion dollar companies and organizations that for the most part view this as a profit-driven new technological innovation that have absolutely no ethical foundation. Tyson, for that matter, they're investing in this as well. Large, multi-billion dollar corporations that do not care about animals or people or the environment, really. They are in this for the money. And so if we're talking about feeding the world and doing it in an ethical way as well, do we really want these companies more in charge of our food? And what happens if they realize it is cheaper to continue taking animal cells regularly, and it is cheaper to continue using fetal bovine serum instead of finding a vegan alternative, which animal advocates are working on now, but when this goes to scale or goes to these big companies, they're gonna go with whatever is cheapest and makes the most profit. So even if there is a theoretical possibility for this to be animal-free, we cannot assume that it will stay that way because we're not doing anything to challenge the underlying notion that it's okay to use and exploit animals.
Yes.
Exactly. And what I want to add to this is what gets under my skin, is that this system that's coming forward, when I talked about technology before, it is a cynicism in the potential for the transformation of people. It's an absolute, flat-out cynicism that people are not capable of being smart enough, wise enough to make change. So that's why so many organizations and people are out there, their buzzwords are cruelty and suffering. And that's how they're selling this. But to me, what this is we're trying to create flesh to sell to people. And to me, this is just another remnant of violence. We've got better options. We should be promoting, like Lee said, lentils, veganic agriculture.
You know, for me, the issues are very clear and very straightforward. The bottom line is that human beings are committed plant eaters. That is absolutely demonstrable from the beginning to the end of our digestive system, from our psychology, mentality, and even down to our subcellular architecture. And so it is truly insane and stupid for us to be looking at going through all of these massive and ridiculous machinations to try and create something that, one, we are not designed to eat, two, that we know makes us ill, and three, that damages the planet, and four, creates unspeakable cruelty for no reason whatsoever. You know, I think at some point God is going to say, you know what, these people are so stupid, I'm done, it's over, let's just start over. Because this just makes no sense. And from my standpoint, we need to just pull out the Amy Winehouse record and go, no, no, no.
We hear a lot about what else are we going to do, because there are people out there who are really diehard carnivores. And I'm listening to Dr. Mills, and I'm thinking, really, we need to get the message out there that we're obligate herbivores.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Like I mentioned before, this idea, this open admission that we have to have flesh is a remnant of our violent nature. And if we can't imagine something better than that, then maybe we deserve it. But the thing is there are alternatives. There are things we can do. It's where we are going to invest our energy, our time, our money, and our hearts and our minds.
We've been listening to Harold Brown, Dr. Milton Mills, Lee Hall, Serena Farb, and Joanne Farb, the panelists at the Vegan Spill the Truth About Lab-Grown Meat. Much thanks to Serena Farb, her social media name is Born Vegan, for sharing this panel discussion. This has been a shortened, edited version. This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlena Massachusetts, and I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. Hear this program again at vegansradio.wordpress.com. Please join us again next week at the same time. This is Marlene wishing you a good day.